Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody. This is Omar Cumberbatch, and I'm your host of the Wellness Ultimatum Radio. Today, we have an excellent show. We have Dr. Daniel Tugut, and he has, like, obviously a really cool name. So Dr. Tugut is a chiropractor who practices in Apple Valley, California. He graduated from the University of California at Santa Barbara with a degree in physical education in 1973 and from Cleveland Chiropractic College in Los Angeles in 1983. He began practicing at the International Sports Medicine Institute in West Los Angeles, where he worked with Dr. Mike Greenberg and Dr. Leroy Perry and treated many of the athletes in the 1984 Los Angeles Olympic Games. He opened his own practice in Apple Valley, California in 1985, where he discovered the diet-pain connection. He has written 4 books on chronic pain. His newest is Chronic Pain Gone, 90 Days, where he shares strategies to eliminate chronic pain through diet modification. And again, the title of this book is Chronic Pain Gone, 90 Days. It's real short, real precise, and gets right to the point. He's going to tell us all about it right now. Doc, are you there?
I'm here, Omar.
Oh, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks very much for having me on and giving me an opportunity to share this information with your listeners. I think they'll appreciate it.
Oh, yeah, no, it was a really, really great book, and I can't wait to get into the material. Just give us a little bit about your journey and how you got into your profession.
Well, I started off with my degree, an undergraduate degree from University of California, and I kind of knocked around for a little while doing different things, and I wanted to get into healthcare, so I went back to chiropractic school. And in chiropractic school, we were taught that holistic medicine is the best medicine, and that is that the foundation of chiropractic is the correction of subluxations or spinal misalignments that free up the nervous system that causes the body to return itself to health. So chiropractors are holistic practitioners, and so I was taught that by aligning the spine and correcting subluxations, we could cure everything because all we did was return the nervous system to normal and the body would heal itself. So excitedly, I went out into practice looking forward to doing that. And I discovered in the beginning what all practitioners learn, and that is that my techniques that I learned in school and practiced very well worked really well for a lot of cases, but not for chronic cases. There's a certain set of patients that just didn't respond to what I was doing. And I thought, well, maybe it's me, I'm not doing it right. So they'd be referred to other doctors, but they'd come around full circle and be back with me again or with an orthopedist or somebody. And what they did is they got involved in the conventional medicine merry-go-round, where I'm sure your listeners who suffer with chronic pain have been there, and that is going from doctor to doctor to doctor. And when you go to a new doctor, it's like, well, let's do some more tests. And the tests never lead to anything. So I was frustrated because I thought, well, I'm not helping these people, and neither is anybody else. And so if I kept doing the same thing over and over again, that'd be kind of foolish. So I started looking into different things, and what happened was I had a patient walk in and see me back in 1985, and he was 53 and injured his shoulder working on his car. And in the course of our conversation, I asked him if he'd ever had any back problems, and he laughed and said, yeah, I'm on disability. I've had severe back pain and migraines for 20 years, 24 hours a day. And I said, well, I'm a chiropractor. I can help you with that. And he said, you don't need to. I'm cured now. He said, I've been cured for 2 years, and now I'm pain-free. I said, well, wait a second. That doesn't make sense, because if you've had pain for 20 years, it's not going away. You have a chronic condition. And he said, yeah, I thought so too. He said, but he went to all kinds of doctors and never got better. And accidentally, he made a change in his diet and lifestyle to lower his cholesterol is all he was trying to do. And he had this weird side effect. It's the opposite of medication side effects. Instead of taking a pill for one thing and getting something bad, he made a change to solve one problem and ended up solving his main problem, which was chronic pain. So when he told me this story, I didn't really believe him, but I started playing around with it. And sure enough, I found out that what he told me was true. And so I started practicing that way and making these changes in patients' diets and lifestyles, and it was very effective. So that was back in 1985, and I didn't really think I was, I didn't know if I was seeing anything real at first, but then after 6 years, I saw that it was real, so I wrote my first book, and I've written 3 other ones since then, as I learned more and more about chronic pain and what causes it. And that's the foundation of what I do, is that you have to find out what causes these puzzling diseases like fibromyalgia and rheumatoid arthritis that, you know, doctors pretty much tell you, you know, learn to live with it and take medication, and that's the best we can do. We don't know what causes fibromyalgia, and consequently we don't have a cure besides pain medication. So that's the bad way to go, and so I figured out a different way, and that's what I've been sharing with people for many years now.
Yeah, no, it really, really is awesome. I really enjoyed the book, and I'm glad that you kind of gave me my first question. Can you explain to the audience, you know, your idea of Jeff and his wagon? Because I thought that was excellent in the kind of way that you kind of just described your background and how you became involved in this practice and this new idea. If you could just get into that with Jeff and his wagon and that concept.
I'm a big fan of parables and metaphors, and I have several of them I'll tell you to help people understand, you know, the concept. It's a very simple concept, but the main concept is a lot of people tend to believe that if there's something wrong with you, there's one cause. You know, if you have back pain, it's because you lifted that box 20 years ago, or you had that work-related injury, or you fell, or you had a series of incidents, and you think that is the only cause. So, but the story of Jeff's wagon is that Jeff is a junk collector in Barstow, California. He looks like Santa Claus, and he goes out every day with his burro pulling an old wagon, and he goes around and picks up people's junk, and he recycles it and sells it and fixes it, etc. So one day he goes out, and he picks up some baling wire and some carpet and some tools and a refrigerator and some luggage and different auto parts, etc., etc. And pretty soon his wagon is creaking along, and it's full, and you know, he can barely get anything on there. So he's going back to his yard, and lo and behold, on the side of the road, here's an abandoned bicycle part, most of the bicycle, but the wheel's missing. So he thought, well, I'll throw that on top. So he takes the bicycle and throws it on top of his heap, and his wagon breaks. And so his perception of that is that the bicycle broke my wagon. But we all, when we see this story, we realize that it wasn't the bicycle. It was everything. You know, the bicycle was the proverbial straw that broke the camel's back. And that's how the human body is. You know, when people suffer with physical pain, whether it's back pain, knee pain, arthritis, fibromyalgia, whatever the doctors call it, but they know they have physical pain, the assumption is that some physically stressful event caused it. So it was bending, lifting, twisting, falling, one of those kinds of things that did it. And so that's where we focus, and that's what we do. But what we find out, and what I found out by asking people more questions, is that it's all those other things that have loaded down the body, just like the wagon was loaded down, that actually caused it to weaken, and then we're susceptible to whatever else Jeff decides to put on that load is likely to break it. And that's what happens with people. And what happens is when they experience back pain, wake up in the morning and their back, they bend over in the shower to pick up the soap and their back goes out, they presume that it was just that bending over that did it, whereas in the past they bent over and it didn't make their back go out. So those are the questions I ask. Well, what else could have contributed to your back going out this time as opposed to last week when you bent over in the shower and your back didn't go out? And so the way the human body works is all pain and all disease, whether it's cancer, heart disease, pimples, back pain, whatever it is, all pain and all disease of the human body is caused by the accumulation of the multiple forms of stress, just like Jeff's wagon. So when you break down, it's not just the last thing that did it, it's the accumulation of all the other things. And so in order to fix Jeff's wagon, he can't just take the bicycle off. He has to unload the whole thing and take all of the stress off that wagon, and then he can rebuild it and recover. And that's the same thing with the human body. You know, you think that it was just that bending over in the shower, but what I discovered is there are specific substances that if you consume them, they are the opposite of an anti-inflammatory drug. So if you go to a doctor with any kind of pain, he or she will tell you, and you'll read it in the literature now, everybody knows the word inflammation. Pain is caused by inflammation. It's a series of chemical events that happen as the body's response to injury, stress, or infection. And so when these series of chemical events go on, those chemicals irritate nerves in the area that send a signal to the brain that's interpreted as pain. So that's where pain comes from, It comes from inflammation. And so if you have any kind of pain caused by inflammation, you see a medical doctor, they are going to prescribe anti-inflammatory drugs like Aleve, Advil, Naproxen, Ibuprofen, Aspirin. There's a whole bunch of them out there. And so what that chemical does is if you have knee pain, you don't take an Advil and rub it on your knee. You put it in your mouth, you swallow it, it gets into your bloodstream, it goes everywhere throughout your whole body. And wherever this chemical inflammatory process is happening, this drug interferes with some of the steps and dumbs down the reaction so that you get a little bit of relief. It takes the edge off. But if you have a chronic condition, when that pill wears off, this inflammation comes right back again. And so the inflammation hasn't been solved. So rather than prescribing anti-inflammatory drugs, what I've discovered is, and it's a very simple concept, there are some very specific substances in foods, food additives, supplements, and medications that are the opposite. They are pro-inflammatory. So for another parable, it'd be like you and me, Omar, trying to put out a fire, and I'm throwing buckets of water on it. That's an anti-inflammatory substance. And you're throwing buckets of gasoline on the fire. The fire's not going to go out. Rather than me to hurry up and throw more water on it, it would make more sense for you, Omar, to stop throwing the gasoline on the fire. So my discovery is there are certain substances, specific substances in foods and food additives that are pro-inflammatory, and that's what prevents the body from healing. And so the solution is find out what those substances are, stop putting them in the body, and the body will heal itself. And that's the whole foundation of all of my work.
Yeah, no, it's very, very good and detailed in the book. If you could just give the audience a brief list of those inflammatory substances, and then we'll get into it a little bit with each one.
Okay. Like I said, I'm very specific. You know, if you, whatever your condition is, if you go to a medical doctor, they're going to take a history, they're going to examine you, they're going to run some tests, and then they're going to prescribe some medication. They're not going to say, you have high cholesterol and arthritis in your knees, and we want you to go take some pills. Go ahead, go out there and take some pills. They don't say that, do they? They say, listen, I'm going to specifically prescribe these specific drugs for your case, and I don't want you to take too much of the dose or not enough of the dose. You have to take them very specifically, and not just any pills, these specific ones. In fact, I'm going to call the pharmacy, and the pharmacist is going to have your list, and he or she is going to explain to you when you take them and why you're taking them, et cetera, and what you can expect. So they're very specific, and in the same light, I'm very specific. A lot of people who are trying to sell the notion of holistic health, they'll say you should be a vegan, or you should be on a paleo diet, or you should eat only organic foods. Those are all good ideas in and of themselves, but the way I look at it is I'm very specific. I don't say go out there and eat a good diet or eat a healthy diet. I say I ask patients specifically what they're consuming, and I look for specific things. And so to answer your question and talk about this list of these pro-inflammatory substances, most chronic pain, whether it's fibromyalgia, knee pain, arthritis, back pain, migraines, to me it doesn't matter where the inflammation is. The whole name of the game is to shut down the inflammation. Most of those cases that cannot be solved by doctors, most of them, that means more than 50%, are caused by a specific protein called casein, C-A-S-E-I-N. That is the main protein that's found in cow's milk and dairy foods, or any animal milk and dairy foods, actually. So that's, you know, that's a big pillar of the standard American diet. We've been told for many, many years that dairy foods are essential for strong bones, for growth, for development, et cetera, et cetera. And so, as a result, it's one of the main parts of the diet. But most people who suffer with any form of chronic pain, their pain is being fed by that specific protein, casein, which is in the milk and dairy food. So the first solution in most cases is to eliminate all dairy foods, which means milk, cheese, yogurt, ice cream, cottage cheese, ranch dressing, blue cheese, all the dairy foods. And that kind of blows people away because they say, well, wait, I thought, you know, milk was supposed to be good for me. So casein is the most common cause of chronic inflammatory disease. But I have to add a couple caveats about that, too. The reason I picked the word casein and don't just say dairy foods is because there's lots of different substances in all foods, in milk and dairy foods included. And so there's lactose, which is the milk sugar. There's casein, which is one of the proteins. There's a couple of other proteins called lactoalbumin and lactoglobulin. And there's some fat. Those other substances are not the gasoline that's causing the inflammation. It is casein. And the reason I know that is because there are many foods on the market that are called non-dairy, like coffee creamers, like Cremora, Coffee Mate, Hazelnut, French Vanilla, all of those different flavored creamers and powdered creamers that are called non-dairy. All of those contain a substance called sodium caseinate. There's the word casein again with A-T-E on the end of it. And that is the same pro-inflammatory substance. So you have to be very careful. You know, you can, for example, you can eat butter. Butter is a dairy food. However, butter contains no milk protein at all. It's all milk fat. So non-dairy foods with caseinate have to be avoided, and all the dairy foods that contain casein. And the other point I wanted to make about the dairy foods is, and your listeners should know that all the information I'm sharing with you today is based on observation. It's not theoretical. It's observational. So these things I've seen over and over and over again. So casein is the main cause, the main pro-inflammatory substance that causes most chronic inflammatory diseases. And every patient that I've ever seen who reacts to casein and caseinate non-dairy foods also reacts to chocolate, only their reaction is worse. So chocolate is the most powerful pro-inflammatory substance that I know of. So there is where most people will get the most relief by eliminating those three specific things, which is casein in dairy foods, caseinate non-dairy foods, and all chocolate. So I know it's a bummer for a lot of people. It's never spinach or Brussels sprouts, but that's the way to start right there.
Well, that's why, you know, I really, really enjoyed your book, because there, I just think you blew away a lot of misconceptions about a lot of the stuff that's going around. I want to say the mainstream media, but, you know, even just people who are into nutrition and trying to get a better handle on their lifestyle, like casein isn't what comes up. It's always lactose. So why is it that, why is that the case? Why is everyone lactose intolerant instead of casein intolerant?
Well,
and how come they're not making that?
Yeah, well, both of those substances are in cow milk products. Lactose is the milk sugar. Casein is the most inflammatory protein substance in milk and dairy foods. And why do both of them cause problems? Again, everything has to be logical to me. And the basic logic to me is cow's milk is the specifically perfect nutrient for baby cows, not for humans. And so we don't have the mechanisms after, when we're born and we nurse on our mother's milk, which does contain casein and does contain lactose, once we stop nursing, we lose the enzymes that break down the lactose, for example. And so lactose, for some people, is a digestive issue. It'll cause gas, bloating, diarrhea, digestive upset, et cetera. Not in everybody, but a lot of people, most digestive upset, in fact, here's another observation, most digestive upset, and there's a million labels. You can call it diverticulitis, diverticulosis, irritable bowel syndrome, Crohn's disease, regional ileitis, ulcers, ulcerative colitis. All of these diseases are digestive disorders, and I have a very, very simple mind, and that is that your body is built really well. And if you're having some kind of digestive upset, to me that tells me that something is going through your digestive tract that you're not processing properly. And it's a matter of instead of probing it with a colonscope or taking different drugs that interfere with the normal functioning of the bowel, it's best to find out what those substances are. So another very simple observational point is that most digestive upset, no matter what you call it, is lactose intolerance, which again would be solved by eliminating all of the dairy foods. Casein is kind of a mixed up deal. A lot of people have heard of it, but they don't really know what it is, and they don't really know that it's highly inflammatory, although some people do. You know, there's a lot of bodybuilders, they want to build muscle mass, and so they're taking these protein supplements. And a lot of them, you'll find out, are what's called whey protein shakes, W-H-E-Y. Whey is two of the proteins that are in milk and dairy foods, the lactoalbumin and the lactoglobulin. Those two make up what's called whey. Those proteins are non-inflammatory, so they're not going to cause any problems. So a lot of the manufacturers have either heard this or figured it out or had heard the bad word on casein, and so they're putting out these whey protein shakes, which have other issues with them that are not bad, that are not good, but they have taken out the casein. But at the same time, in the last few years, I've seen that a lot of the real aggressive bodybuilders are now using a protein supplement that is almost pure casein. So there's these casein protein supplements out there that, and I'll see the bodybuilders that come in, now they're having sciatic pain or chest pain or whatever it is, and their perception is they're working out too hard, they're lifting too much weight, when in fact all it is they're consuming the highly pro-inflammatory substance casein. So casein and lactose are not, they're related because they come from cow's milk and from animal milk. However, there are some people who have lactose intolerance who don't have a sensitivity to casein and vice versa. So I don't want the listeners to become chemists, but I want them to be able to control their symptoms by very specifically looking for what's causing them.
Gotcha, gotcha. And I know you upset a lot of the listeners because of your chocolate analysis as well.
Yeah.
Could you go into that a little bit, too?
Yeah, that's a big bummer for me, too, because I am a chocoholic, although I don't consume chocolate anymore. I had a few instances where I thought chocolate raised the inflammation in my body so that I did have back pain or problems. But for me, it was mainly irritability. It made me grouchy. And, you know, a lot of people are affected. But, you know, the inflammation that happens because chocolate is highly inflammatory is it affects the nervous system. And so a lot of women around that special time of month, they get cravings. And what happens? What do they crave? A lot of them will crave salty foods, but others will crave chocolate. And they'll consume this chocolate, and what will they have? They'll have more cramps. They'll have PMS symptoms. They'll get emotional. They'll get grouchy. They'll get all those things. Not everybody, but certain women do. And it's because of the inflammatory nature of the chocolate. So it's a real shame that chocolate is a problem, but even dark chocolate, even white chocolate, even chocolate flavoring, all of it. If I ever see anybody who comes into the office and has severe pain, no matter where it is, that just happened in the last day or two, you can bet that they consume chocolate. And sure enough, we make the connection almost every time. So, again, it's one of the best tasting foods on the planet, but highly inflammatory for those who are sensitive to it. And that's not everybody. But anybody, if you take the world population and you find out how many people are sensitive to casein and chocolate, it's a percentage that's probably small. But if you take all of the people who suffer with chronic conditions, the ones who are sensitive to those substances is much bigger, more than half. So it's significant. And I'm sorry to say that chocolate is the most powerful pro-inflammatory substance there is.
Yeah, because it's just so crazy that they tout chocolate as a superfood now in a lot of sectors. And is that because, is it the cacao or the chocolate different? I know the cacao is a part of chocolate. Is that inflammatory too? It's like, because I know that there's a lot like a dark chocolate with 90% dark chocolate. That itself is the one that you're considering highly inflammatory?
It could be, but I don't really know. In fact, I have to say I don't know a lot about chocolate chemically. And the reason is because there is no casein, there is no milk product in chocolate except for milk chocolate. But people who are sensitive to casein, they'll react to all kinds of chocolate. Like, for example, if you figure it's milk and dairy foods, and so you go out and you make yourself some hot chocolate by pouring boiling water into a cup of Hershey's cocoa mix, which has no milk in it, and then you add a soy milk or an almond milk, there's no milk product in there. But these patients who are sensitive to milk, they react to it. So for some reason, there's a connection between milk allergy and chocolate sensitivity. And like I said, across the board for me, it's 100%. And that's after 30 years of looking at it. So I'm more of a macroscopic person. I mentioned casein because of seeing the reaction that people had to non-dairy foods and wondering what the heck was that all about. And then I found out that it was casein and caseinate. But as far as chocolate, I don't really know what the chemical connection is. So I'm kind of ignorant about that. I'm sure one day somebody's going to figure it out. But like I said, I'm macroscopic. And so the main thing is I tell people is say, listen, you can read the literature and it says that dark chocolate has antioxidant qualities to it and it gets rid of free radicals and it does all this. And that's just something you have to kind of take with a grain of sand, right? You don't know. You know, it's like your mechanic right. telling you something's wrong with your car. You don't know. So maybe that's true, maybe that's not. What I tell people is that what you can know is true is that if you have a chronic condition, stay away from chocolate for a while and see what happens. When you see the symptoms go right. away, then if you're really curious, go ahead and have some chocolate. And once you see the reaction two or three times, and that's it's amazing, that's usually what it takes with people, they'll finally go, you know what, it really is true what you said about chocolate, isn't it? I said, yes, it is. So everybody has to find out their own case and find out, you know, what it is you're sensitive to and what you're not. What I have discovered for your listeners and for the people who can read my book, which is called Chronic Pain Gone 90 Days, is that there is an answer to your problems. I've worked through all these substances, and I know what the main ones are. So most people who will read the book, if they follow the instructions, a huge percent of them, their chronic pain will be gone forever until they get re-exposure to those things again.
You know, it is amazing, and I read through it, and you definitely piqued my interest with the casein part and the chocolate part, but I know that one of the more common ones that is a hot topic, of course, recently, I should say in recent history, is gluten, and you definitely give a great explanation of why today's gluten is so much of an issue, and I'd love for you to share that with the audience as well.
Yeah, it's kind of a shame that, well, it's a good thing that gluten has become faddish, I would say. People now have heard of it, and it's funny, you go through the grocery stores, and so many products say no gluten on them, you know, like corn chips, which never had gluten in them anyway, but they're riding the wave of people wanting to avoid gluten. So gluten, on my list of substances that are pro-inflammatory, I list them in the book from top to bottom. That is the most common ones going on down the list. And gluten is down at number 4 or 5. So it's not as common as dairy and chocolate and a couple other ones we haven't mentioned yet. But gluten, you know, when you think about dairy and it causing problems, that's kind of logical to me. It's like, well, cow's milk is for cows, and so I see why that would bother you. But gluten, wheat, that comes from wheat, by the way, it's the protein that's in wheat and wheat flour, that's the staff of life, right? It's been the main food of humans for thousands and thousands of years. And so why would that be bad for you? You know, God created it, planted it on the earth. It's a plant food. It should be good for you. But what happened is it's been crossbred and hybridized many, many times over the years in a very natural way. You know, one plant mating with another plant and getting a hybrid and then using that hybrid to produce a crop that's more productive or fuller or tastier or whatever it is, that's a natural process. And humans sort of can adapt to that, although it's hard to keep up with how fast plants will divide and humans can adapt. But in 1949 and 50, the big change happened, and that was gluten is the for all of you who hear the other catchphrases, gluten was the first GMO, genetically modified organism. And how that happened is people were starving in Africa, and the World Health Organization got the scientists together and said, listen, we've got to create a foodstuff that is drought-resistant and can produce a lot of food so we can plant it in Africa and feed these people so they don't starve to death. And they decided that the best foodstuff would be wheat. So scientists started crossbreeding and hybridizing, and it's a very slow process. You know, you have to wait for the plants to mature and all that stuff. Well, one scientist, a German named Norman Borlaug, he had a better way. What he did is he took wheat seeds and he exposed them to radiation, to alpha and gamma waves. And what he did is create mutations. And so in most cases, mutations are bad, but he was able to create a few good mutations that were very productive plants. They had strong stalks so they could hold a lot of crop on them, a lot of food product, and they were drought resistant. And so that's what most of our wheat in the world is based on now, these highly productive plants. But they are not a result of God's intention. They are God's intention, or nature, whatever you want to call it, was the creation of the genetics of the seed, and that seed was forced to change by radiation. So this is a product now that is not the same as what we had before. And sure enough, in the 1950s and 60s, since then, gluten intolerance in the world has quadrupled. And now there's lots and lots of cases, and now it's very, very popular. So that's what happened to gluten. It's not that it's a bad food. It's been genetically modified. So it makes us wonder about all the foods today that are being genetically modified. The sad thing about gluten being so popular, though, to me, is that it's hard to get people to consider changing their diets. It's always been difficult for me, you know, because people want to eat what they want to eat. And the other sad thing about making these diet changes is that, you know, like I said, it's not Brussels sprouts. It's chocolate and milk and ice cream and cheese, all the things that people really, really like. And bread, think about it, you know. But what's happened is that somehow gluten has become so popular that many people will say, okay, honey, we're going to change our diets. We're going to cut out all the gluten. And so they'll do that for a few months, and they'll go, well, it didn't work. So changing our diets is not going to help. And what's happened in those cases is they've eliminated gluten, but it's way down at number 5 on the list. And while they've eliminated gluten, they're busily consuming lots of cheese, lots of dairy foods, lots of chocolates. And that's why the inflammation has never gone down and why they haven't changed. So it's better to start at the top and work down and eliminate the main ones first. So gluten, in my experience, in my practice, 90% of the people who have any kind of inflammatory problem, it's milk and dairy foods and chocolate, with a couple other ones, like I said, we're going to talk about in a minute. Gluten is about 10%. Maybe 10% of the patients I see have a sensitivity to gluten. The other thing significant about gluten, based on my observations, is that most people who are sensitive to gluten are also sensitive to dairy. So that's, you know, so usually if you eliminate the gluten, you've also got to eliminate the dairy to get the best results.
Right, right. Yeah, now that part was, of course, I wanted to touch on because a lot of people are interested in that topic. And I know that a lot of times with the products that are gluten-free, those aren't necessarily healthy for you either. They put on a whole host of other things in them and that don't make that too high on the list of healthy food, at least in my experience.
Sure, sure. And that's common with a lot of things. You know, people will go into a health food store or a Trader Joe's or a Whole Foods Market or these, and the assumption will be that everything in this store is healthy, but they don't realize that there are additives that are used even in health food that are neurotoxins that can cause the same issues. And so those are the ones that we haven't talked about yet. There's a couple of them that are neurotoxins. The ones I've talked about so far are foods that are called allergens. What that means, like the gluten and the dairy, those substances and the chocolate, those are substances that some people react to and some people don't. Like you've heard of people who react to peanuts, right? Well, most people don't.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
people who are sensitive to peanuts, they have to watch out for them because they're going to have a reaction. The next substance on the list is a nerve toxin, and it's very widely used. In fact, I wrote a book about it back in 1997 called MSG is Everywhere. And, of course, I'm talking about MSG. And the reason I called it that title is because MSG is everywhere. In health food stores, in restaurants, it's all over the place. And it's a nerve toxin that a lot of people have heard of, and they'll swear to me. They say, oh, yeah, I know about MSG. I never touch that stuff. And within 5 minutes of questioning them, I'll find out that they're getting it very regularly. So it's something that everybody ought to know about.
Yeah, I think this is the one that blew me away. And I have mentioned to you off the record, I had said that I was pretty much thinking that I didn't have anything with MSG. And then just you give a great tutorial about how to read labels and look for certain things in your book, which is makes the book invaluable on its own. But I kind of thought, and I obviously it was my ignorance, that like MSG was almost in my mind banned. I remember hearing about it in Chinese restaurants, and it's like, you know, they were making them not use it anymore, and it was kind of something that I thought was banned. And
yeah, a lot of people
have
expressed that thought to me, saying, "Oh, I thought that was illegal," and you know, the opposite is true. It didn't really get into this country until 1948, and it came from Japan. And the reason that American food processors jumped on it was because back then in the 40s, they were canning vegetables in tin cans. And, you know, it was great for preserving them. You could keep a can for a long time and the food was still good. The problem is you could taste the can. You could taste the tinniness of the green beans or the peas, whatever it was. And what the manufacturers of MSG pointed out to the food processors in America was that you put MSG in there and you can't taste the can anymore. As a matter of fact, the food ends up tasting a whole bunch better. And this was proven to them. And so, boom, MSG took off in this country in 1948. And it's only grown since then. It's you know, what has grown also in tandem with it is people's knowledge of it. But the knowledge is always tempered with a certain amount of ignorance, because that's how the MSG manufacturers want it to be. You know, they'll tell you, oh, it's a completely natural substance. This is the MSG myth. People do not react to this substance. It's something else. But again, everything I base my studies on is observation, and my observation is that MSG causes many, 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 many health problems, and I see it daily in my practice. So it's something that is difficult to avoid, and like you said, you were blown away because, well, you think you're going to go into the store and you're going to look at a label on a processed food, like a can of soup or something, and say, I'm going to look for monosodium glutamate or MSG. That's what it's going to say. And the problem is they have learned to disguise it under lots and lots of other names. And so people will say, there's no MSG in here. But there is actually hydrolyzed protein or natural flavors or yeast extract or autolyzed yeast or protein isolate. Those are some of the many terms that are actually, that what they do is they actually describe the process of what was done to a food that created MSG, and that's why it's in the food, because MSG is a very powerful and very effective flavor enhancer. It does make food taste better. There's no doubt about it. The problem is it's a nerve toxin. It stimulates the taste buds. That's why it makes food taste better, which are nerve endings on your tongue, but it gets into the bloodstream and it continues to irritate the nervous system, causing common symptoms like panic attacks, mood changes, heart palpitations, mysterious bruises, neck pain, back pain, headaches, swelling in the hands, digestive upset. There's lots and lots of different symptoms. All of those things I just listed are things that I've seen in my practice, and we know that the on-off switch is MSG. When people avoid the MSG, those symptoms go away. And when they expose themselves to MSG accidentally or in a moment of weakness, those symptoms come back. We've seen that thousands of times. So we know that MSG is indeed a problem, not for everybody, but for many, many people. The other thing significant about MSG as a toxin is that toxins are dose-dependent. What that means is that the allergens we talked about, milk and wheat and those things, chocolate, they are not dose-dependent. If you have a sensitivity to chocolate, people tell me this all the time, I only had a little bit. Their sensitivity is such through allergy that they get a strong reaction to even a little bit. Toxins, on the other hand, are dose dependent. Like, for example, alcohol is a toxin. So if you take a sip of alcohol, you may not notice anything. But if you have two or three drinks, you start to notice the effect on your nervous system. And if you have enough of it, it'll kill you. So that's how toxins are. And MSG is a toxin that, if the dose is big enough, it will get you. And you might not know what's going on. You'll just say, hey, babe, you know what? I feel really lousy tonight. I don't know what it is. I've got a headache, and I'm in a bad mood, and I don't know what happened, but blah, blah, blah. And, you know, when people start realizing that MSG is everywhere and it causes these symptoms, then they can do something about it. And, the best thing is they'll have an explanation of why they feel so funky all the time. So once people start making the connections to the substance I've found, then they can control their symptoms, and I think that's important. They can control their symptoms or not control them, because believe me, I have people who they can't get off the chocolate, they can't get off the cheese, and so they just kind of deal with it.
Yeah, I think I fall into those categories at times, too. I know certain things are not that good for me, and I just deal with the consequences afterwards. But I just wanted to ask you one more question about the MSG, because, again, that was probably one of the most profound things that I found in your book. Like, even in organic products, is MSG, I'm going to say allowed, but I've noticed that it's in organic products. Now, is that something that is common, or
I don't think I don't it's common, say it's, but what's blown me away is that, you know, whenever I go shopping with my wife, I pick up things and look at labels. And I'm surprised how many things that, like if you go into a Trader Joe's or a Whole Food Market, that here these healthy things are called all natural and stuff, and they do have MSG in them. So it's something that's, you know, in fact, I've become more reliant on people's reactions. I have patients who are extremely sensitive to the stuff. If they get the littlest bit of it, they react. And so they're able to tell me things that I didn't know. They'll say, I went to this restaurant or I had this food and I had an MSG reaction. That happened with I don't know if I get in trouble for saying the brand, so I won't say it, but there's – where are you, Omar? Are you on the East Coast?
I'm in New York, yes.
You're in New York. Well, I'm out here on the West Coast, And we have a very famous burger chain that I don't think you have out there, and I won't say their name. But I noticed that people who had a sensitivity to MSG, whenever they ate at this burger place, they reacted. And so I thought, they have MSG in their burgers. And so when you drive through their operation, you can see them preparing the burgers, and you see them shaking something on the meat. So I called up In-N-Out, and I said, I called up this burger stand, and I said, what is it that you're putting on that meat? And they said, it's only salt. And I said, there's nothing else? They go, no. See, when you call them and you ask for a recipe, they won't tell you, but they will answer the question, is this particular item in your sauce or whatever? And they will say yes or no. So I kept seeing this reaction, and so finally I had this patient who I wrote about in the MSG book who was highly sensitive to MSG. I hadn't seen him for years, and he came in and we were talking, and he said, I eat there all the time. I never have a reaction. I said, wow, what is it then? I said, do you get the burger, just the regular burger? He says, yeah, I get it with no cheese. He says, and I get it with no sauce. And so I went, aha, the sauce. So I called up the place and asked him, and yes, it is in the sauce. That's how you kind of have to do it. I have other patients who tell me they can smell the stuff. They walk into a restaurant, they said they can smell it, they know it's there. So everybody has a different sensitivity, just like people do to alcohol. So the MSG, like I said, there should be a giant expose on it so that, you know, at least what a label should say is this product does contain some MSG. But I'll tell you, it's the opposite. In fact, in my slideshow that I show people, I have a slide of a food product that says delicious, and it says no MSG with an asterisk after it. And so you think, okay, I'm going to look down at the small print, and it's going to say it does have MSG, and it does. But you look at the very small print, and it's not in there. But then you look at this little line at the bottom of the product. You go, what is that line down there? You get out a magnifying glass. That is even smaller print, and that's where they say this product does contain yeast extract and autolyzed yeast, which do contain MSG. So they know that there's an awareness of MSG, and instead of informing people, they are misleading people, a lot of labels are. So another common label is no MSG added, or we add no MSG. Usually what that means is they added a substance that has MSG in it, and it's in the food. So if you ever see a food that says no MSG, period, most of the time there's no MSG in it.
Got it. Yeah, really, really crazy stuff. I mean, the length that these people go to just disguise what they're actually putting in the food is unbelievable. And I know that you've been giving us, you know, throughout the show little tips. But can you give us like a quick tutorial of other things that you think that we should be looking at when we read our labels?
Sure. The quick tutorial on label reading is, you know, people come in after their second visit, their first visit, and they have the list of things I tell them to avoid and all the AKAs and all that stuff, and they come back and they go, my God, I went grocery shopping. We were in the store for 4 hours, and I spent $12 because they read all these labels, and they were so confused by it all. And I said, yeah, it is very confusing because there's all these big words that are chemical names, et cetera, et cetera. So I tell them, I said, do you want the shortcut? And they said, yeah, what's the shortcut? I said, if it has a label on it, don't buy it. And they go, well, what am I supposed to get? And I said, well, think about it. Go get produce. There's no label on that. Fruits and vegetables. You can go get eggs. There's no label on that. Eggs are pure natural food that don't cause any problems for most people. Go get fresh meat, steaks, hamburger, chicken, fish, turkey, pork. All of the fresh meats are fine. Just stay away from the processed meats like salami, bologna, pastrami. All of those things have a label on them, and they list all the chemicals that are added to the meat that make it an unnatural product and, in many cases, an unhealthy product. So that is the true shortcut, is to avoid foods that have labels. But for convenience, a lot of people who work and et cetera, they want to have some canned food that are easy to prepare or some frozen foods, and there are lots of those available. If you go to the vegetable section and you get a canned item that has maybe one, two, or three ingredients, like peas or peas and carrots or peas and carrots and corn, usually those are okay. They might add some salt. But once you get into the canned and bottled foods that are the sauces and the mixes and the soups, that's where they start adding more and more stuff. There's not just one or two things in there. There's 10 or 20. And almost always there'll be some MSG. There'll be some dyes that are questionable. There'll be some preservatives that are questionable. So The label reading game is the smaller the label, the better it is. And there are lots of things, if you go to a Trader Joe's or a Whole Foods market, that there are 10 maybe things on the label, but they're all very good things, you know, like celery root and salt and pepper and cumin and all natural substances. So if there are natural substances, our body is made to process those. All those words with X's and Y's and you know, you can't pronounce them, those are all questionable. And I've just scratched the surface. I know that monosodium glutamate, yeast extract, autolyzed yeast, hydrolyzed protein, natural flavors, flavorings, protein isolate. I know these things. These are some of the things that people react to. But there are so many other things that I don't really know if they cause reactions or not. I do know they're unnatural. Like most cereals have butylated hydroxytoluene or butylated hydroxyanisole, you know, BHA and BHT. What do those things do? There's a lot of researchers who say they do things. I can't really say I've seen them as inflammatory reactionary things, but you know, I haven't really looked into it. So I've only scratched the surface. And so the way to avoid all the other stuff that may be causing problems is stay away from processed foods, don't eat in restaurants, don't eat foods that have labels on them. That's onerous and very hard for some people to do. So in my book, I list the 10 things that you should do to eliminate chronic pain, and they're basically avoiding these things. But the other thing I mention in there at the end of that list is that I call it the good news. And the good news is that you don't have to be this strict forever in most cases. And most people don't react to the entire list. And I'll just reiterate right now what that list is. The list is casein in milk and dairy foods, caseinate in non-dairy foods like coffee creamers, chocolate, the most powerful cause of pain, monosodium glutamate, the additive we just spoke about a minute ago, aspartame, which we haven't discussed yet, but is a nerve toxin that's an artificial sweetener in Equal and NutraSweet. After that is gluten. And the last one we haven't really talked about yet is the biggest artificial group of artificial substances that there is on the planet, and that is pharmaceuticals, medications. So many, many, many people react to the medications they have. And if you don't believe me, watch primetime TV at night. Most of the commercials are for drugs, and if you listen to the commercials, they're all the same. The first 10 or 15 seconds, they're going to tell you how wonderful this drug is and the problems it's going to solve. But the bulk of the commercial, the last 45 seconds to 2 minutes in the case of Celebrex, it, all the horrible things that may happen to you. So side effects are something that happen with medication, and the worst one I've seen is the cholesterol pills. Many people come in to see me with problems like sciatic pain, lower back pain, leg aches, leg cramps, swelling in the limbs. It can be in the upper body that are caused by Lipitor, Zocor, Mevacor, Provacol, Simvastatin, Crestor, Vitorin, Zetia, Gemfibrozil. There's a ton of cholesterol pills on the market that doctors, in my opinion, are too aggressively forcing on people, telling them that they're going to die of a heart attack if they don't take these drugs, and instead they're supposed to put up with these horrible side effects. But you know, the list of chemical substances that are contributing to our demise goes on and on and on and on and on. So what the point I was going to make when you get down to the good news is that most people find that, they might find that, you know what, it's only dairy foods that bother me. I've had other patients that tell me that, you know what, I can eat dark cheese once in a while and it doesn't bother me, but if I eat the light cheese, it gets me. Other people say the dairy foods are their big culprit. Other people tell me that dairy foods don't bother them that much, but MSG is the big culprit. I had a patient in today who that was her story. But what I'm trying to point you to is that if you have some chronic condition, you've pretty much been told it's hopeless and that all you can do is take OxyContin or Norco or ibuprofen. And what I'm telling you is that look a different direction. It's not something you need to take. It's something you need to stop taking. And so when people can focus on that, people will be able to manage their own cases without my information. They'll develop their own understanding. Like, for example, I did a radio show and had this patient of mine on. She's 5 years old, and she'd been suffering with eczema her whole life, her whole 5 years. Her arms were bloody and scratched, and her parents were at their wit's end. Her father had come in to see me for an exam for a truck driver, and he saw some pictures on my wall of a psoriasis case that had cleared up. And he said, "What's the deal with this?" And I told him, I said, well, it was psoriasis, and we were able to clear it up by changing his diet. He goes, hmm. So he bought one of my books. 2 months later, he came back in and said, I want to buy 20 books. And we said, I said, what's going on? And he told me that his daughter, 5-year-old Charlotte, had chronic eczema that she'd been suffering with her whole life. Well, they changed her diet, and the big culprits were these. Number one, dairy foods. Number two, chocolate. And number three, guess what? Nuts. So that's not even on my list of stuff. But in her case, what happened is these people started focusing on what their child was eating, and they were able to control her symptoms. And that's what I want everybody to do. You know, start off with my list and get rid of your symptoms, and then find out what things you can get away with and what things you can't get away with. And then, you know, life isn't so tough. You don't have to be, a Jesuit or somebody who's fasting. You know, you can be creative with your diet. So if everybody will start looking in this direction, that's where the solutions are going to come from.
Absolutely. It's truly great, great information. And I have two quick topics that I wanted you to touch on briefly before I give you an opportunity to just tell the audience how to get your book and how to contact you and if they want any more information. I just wanted your opinion on coffee and alcohol. I know that alcohol you had touched on as being a toxin. But what's your stance on coffee?
Coffee is a really interesting one because I've been a coffee drinker on and off my whole life, and I've always been very, very healthy. And recently, I've quit coffee for as many as 4 years at a time. Well, recently, in the last 6-8 months, I started getting some knee pain that I hadn't had before. It hurts like the devil when I go up and down stairs. And I knew I hadn't done anything physically, so I thought, well, what I was doing is I was doing coffee. I avoid dairy foods almost 100%. Every once in a while I'll have something. So I wasn't doing a lot, but I was drinking coffee and when I go to a restaurant, I'd use their creamer, which would usually be half and half. So I thought, okay, that makes sense. So I completely went off all the dairy, and I used the soy creamer in my coffee, and the knee pain persisted even after months. And so I thought, geez, I wonder if it's the coffee. And so I have 3 weeks now off of coffee, and I can't make a conclusive statement yet, but I think my condition has improved. And so I've heard other people tell me that they had arthritis that they feel was aggravated by coffee. So whether it's, you know, and I would feel bad if that was true in all these years. I haven't been looking into that for patients, but I'm going to experiment on myself and find out what happens. But, you know, on the other side of the coin, when people come in to see me, I don't really want to put a cramp in their lifestyle. That's not my goal. My goal is one thing, to eliminate their pain and let them understand what's causing it so they can control it. Believe it or not, there are some people who they choose to consume the things that cause their pain, just like people smoke. You know, they know it's bad for them. I had a lady come in years ago with migraines. All we did was take her off of dairy foods and chocolate. That solved her case within 2 weeks. I released her. I didn't see her for 6 months, and I called her up just to see how she was doing, and she says, oh, I'm fine. I said, how's your headache? She goes, they're back again. And I said, I must have missed something. She goes, oh, no, it's the milk. I said, are you drinking milk again? She goes, yeah. I go, and you see that it's causing your headache? She goes, oh, yeah. And I said, you're still drinking it? She goes, yeah, I really like it. So, and you know, at first I thought, you know, in my own mind, you know, what an idiot. But now I see myself, I really, really, really want coffee, and it's very difficult for me to quit. So it is difficult to do, making these changes. But so coffee is questionable right now. I don't think it's a good substance. I always, all the times that I've been off of it, I feel much calmer. I feel better in a lot of ways. So the jury's out on that one, so I can't really make a statement about coffee. Although it is a nerve stimulant, and I think that the nervous system should not be artificially stimulated. So from that point of view, I think coffee is not a good thing. But the point I was going to make is that, you know, I already have to tell people to give up things they really, really love. And then to get down to the point and say, okay, you have one thing left in your life for your enjoyment, that's your coffee, guess what? I want you to stop drinking coffee because, you know, they'll hate that. But the point I want to make about coffee, too, is that when we talk about headaches, again, all my concepts are very simple. Headaches have two causes. Number one, exposure to some chemical substance that causes the reaction. Dairy foods and chocolate are the most common. MSG is next. The second thing that causes headaches is withdrawal from substances. For example, people who are coffee drinkers who don't get their coffee, they usually know what happens. They get a headache. That's caffeine withdrawal. And that will go away usually in 3 or 4 days, up to 2 weeks, if they continue to stay off of coffee. So all the other things that I tell people to quit in their particular cases, whether it's dairy or chocolate or whatever, they, in many cases, half the cases, they will have withdrawal, which will be, they'll call me and say, well, now I'm worse. They said 3 days into your diet, and I have a headache, and I feel like I'm getting sick and all that stuff. That is withdrawal. So the book explains all of this, you know, what you can expect, what changes you need to make, how you're going to feel, how long it takes to recover, and what you can expect in the future. You know, I just want people to know that they can control their symptoms, and this is the way to go about it. And the other thing that people should know is that I'm not any genius. If people came in for chiropractic care who had already been to chiropractors and they think that I'm a better chiropractor and I'm going to do a better adjustment, I don't necessarily think that's true. But if I tell them something to try that they've never tried before, well, there's hope in that, you know, because they've already tried all this other stuff. And so guess what? Here's something you haven't tried. They go, yeah, nobody ever mentioned that. And that's the weakness with conventional medicine. All of the patients I see who suffer with any kind of chronic disorder, when I'm questioning them, I say, did your doctor ever ask you what you eat? The answer is always no. No, they never ask me what I eat. So I said, so that seems weird to me that, you know, the foundation of modern medicine is that if they think something's wrong with you, they're going to prescribe something for you to swallow. They think that's going to help you. That's going to make a change in your body, lower your cholesterol, lower your blood sugar, make you calmer, give you more energy, whatever it is. But they don't at the same time realize that all the other stuff you put in your body has an effect on you too. And so it's a matter of eliminating those things that cause the problem.
Absolutely. 100% agree. I think my final question to you, and this is something that I also got in the book that I thought was really, really amazing, because I know personally I used to have this issue growing up. Can you please describe the concept of growing pains and the probability that it's actually a milk allergy?
Yes, it's a high probability, and that's just, again, based on observation. But when a doctor describes your symptoms as, for example, fibromyalgia, that's not a genius term. That's just translating into Latin what you've told him you have. You know, I have pain in my connective tissue and in my muscle tissue. Okay, let's call that fibromyalgia, which means that in Latin. Cervicocranial syndrome means your head hurts. So growing pains, isn't that a weird diagnosis? We're all supposed to grow, aren't we? So why would that be a painful process? You know, there are certain things that are like teething. I just had a great-granddaughter go through the teething process, and that certainly is painful. But growth is a natural thing. And so people who have growing pains, they're having some kind of inflammatory process that the doctors can't pinpoint and say, well, you have a knee problem. It, you know, it hurts everywhere, so it's because you are growing. What's happening is the pain is happening at the same time you're growing, but one is not causing the other. And so what's usually causing it is milk allergy. And I'll tell you the common symptoms to milk allergy in childhood, and it'll blow you away. Recurrent ear infections in infants and toddlers is only one thing, and that is milk allergy. I'm not surprised every pediatrician on the planet doesn't know that, but most of them don't know that. The solution is not to put tubes in the ears and take antibiotics. The solution is to eliminate milk products. Bedwetting. Bedwetting is milk allergy. Growing pains is milk allergy. Acne is usually milk allergy. So all of these things that I've seen, they're documented by other doctors too, although they're not as well read as you know, the conventional medical textbooks, but a lot of us have seen that, and so that's what growing pains are. They're inflammation in the joints and the muscles caused by some pro-inflammatory substance. 90% of the time, it's milk protein, and that's the truth. And so if you have a kid who's, it's very easy to test out, and you can then email me or write me and say, hey, Dr. Tugid, you're a quack. I took him off of milk and it didn't work. Or you can write me and say the other. So, you know, everything is based on observation, and you can have your own observation if you know where to look. So milk allergy is manifested as growing pains, ear infections, acne, all kinds of problems.
Okay, so now I have to ask you my usual one show selfish question, because you just described pretty much, and I'm going to completely embarrass myself on the air, which is okay, and that's just, you know, it's just for the greater good. I had all of those things. I had growing pains. I went to bed at one point. I did have acne. Now, do I grow out of that? And is it something that carries with me for the rest of my life? Because I do love milk. I do notice that I do have a little bit of reaction with bloating and stuff at this age. Now,
right.
Is that something that is just something that I have, I'm never getting written in, that's just the end of it, or it's kind of something that you quote-unquote grow out of?
No, that's conventional wisdom, conventional medicine. You know, the conventional medicine that doesn't work for chronic conditions, they say that you outgrow allergies. The reason they say that is confusing because symptoms change. If you have an infant who has recurrent ear infections and no one ever tells you that it's milk allergy, guess what? They eventually grow out of those symptoms. Those ear infections go away. But then they have something else. It'll be tonsillitis, or it'll be eczema, or it'll be bedwetting. And then you outgrow that. And then it's acne, and you outgrow that. But what's happening is part of your body reacts to it, like the acne or the bedwetting, whatever it is. Bedwetting, by the way, is a neurological reaction to the milk protein that causes the bladder to relax. It's not the kid's fault. The kid, you know, that the parents went through hell all those years over that. You know, they'd say, well, you know, you psychologically damaged your kids. They said, how can that be? I raised four kids. Only one of them wet the bed. They're all the same. But anyways, the milk allergy causes so many different problems. But no, in what I say in my book is the milk allergy is not outgrown. It'll manifest itself as another inflammatory process, because all this is about, here's the very, very simple concept. It goes back to Jeff and the wagon. All we're doing is turning down the heat or the inflammation in the body. As the inflammation rises in the body caused by any of these specific things, something's going to break. It could be a pimple. It could be a headache. It could be eczema. Something's going to break somewhere. Just like with Jeff's wagon, it's not necessarily the front axle or the back axle. It's something is going to break because it's overloaded. And so the solution here is to turn down the heat. You've got to stop the inflammation by stop throwing the gasoline on the fire. Stop throwing the casein or the gluten or the chocolate or whatever it is into the system. And then what happens is the system heals itself. So there was a case that I saw years ago. A girl came in. She was 21, and she had migraines and severe neck and upper back tightness. We went over everything, and I said, okay, here's the solution. We're going to do a series of chiropractic treatments and physical therapy, and we're going to have you eliminate milk and dairy foods. I asked her about her diet, and she was a regular user. And she goes, that's really weird. I go, why is that? She goes, because I used to be allergic to milk. And I said, what happened? And she brought a picture in, and it's on my wall. It's a picture of her face when she was 15, swollen. Her eyes are swollen. Her lips are swollen. She went to the doctors for years. This kept happening. Nobody knew what it was. Finally, she and her mom figured out that whenever she drank milk or ate cheese, that happened. So they put two and two together, which the doctors didn't. She cut out the dairy food, and it all went away. And then when she was 18, she got married, and she started eating dairy foods again. She goes, guess what? I'm not allergic anymore. My face doesn't swell up. And I said, no, you still have high inflammation in your body, and now you're getting migraines and neck pain. So the solution is the same. So the long answer that I just gave you is that, no, allergies are not outgrown. They just keep feeding the inflammation in the body, and as one part of the body strengthens up to it, another part will break down. So the solution is turn down the inflammation by eliminating these specific substances.
A lot of information, Doc, and I'm taken aback. I really, really thought that book was awesome, and I appreciate you being on the show and really getting into this. And I learned a lot, and I could only thank you for that. I just want to give you the opportunity to just tell everybody how to get your book, how to get in touch with you, and anything that you want to tell the audience. And as you
sure, the book I wrote this time called Chronic Pain Gone 90 Days is now an e-book. You can get it on Kindle, Nook, iBooks. The big steal is as a Google app. You can get it on the Google App Store for 99 cents. It's in Barnes & Noble. I wrote it very simply. It's really easy to read. Within 3 minutes of opening that book and reading it, you'll know what it's about and what you have to do. You know, if you buy a self-help book for anything, like to build a stereo system, you don't want to see a lot of words. You want them to get to the point, you know, what do I have to do right now? And that's how I wrote this book. So the book is Chronic Pain Gone 90 Days. You can get it on Amazon, iBooks, Kindle, Nook, Barnes & Noble. You can also go to my webpage and get more information, and my webpage is danieltoogood.com, and that's danieltwoogood.com. Get more information there. You can Google me. I have some videos of some of my talks that are on my webpage. That breaks it down even more. And I answer all emails, and if you want to contact me by email, it's my name at AOL.com, which is DRTWOGOOD at AOL.com. My name is Dr. Toogood. That's really my name. So it's like the number two and good. So like I said, I just hope some people know where to look now to get some answers, and their cases are not hopeless. They can find relief from their pain, and this is how you do it.
Excellent show, Doc. I really appreciate you being on the show. And again, thanks for all the information. And then I definitely would love to have you back on the show. I mean, we went through an hour without an issue, and just, I feel like I could ask you like 65 more questions. But I'm going to save it. I hope you come back for an encore.
Hey, thanks very much, Omar. Thanks for having me, and hopefully we'll talk again soon.
Absolutely. You have a good night, Doc.
All right, you too. Bye-bye.
Really great show with Dr. Daniel Toogood. Oh, man. That was a lot of information. I know you ruined a lot of people's nights because a lot of the stuff that we tend to love can have inflammatory properties. I know he did give us opportunities to say that all these kinds of things might be something that we wouldn't necessarily have to avoid forever. But if you do have a chronic condition, please, please give this a chance because, you know, the doctor has been in the business for quite a long time, and this is his general observation. I know that he's helped many, many people overcome their chronic pain. Again, thanks, Doc, for the opportunity on the show. Next week, we have Dr. Dawson Church. He is an emotional freedom techniques expert, EFT, or what is also known as tapping. Really, really interesting stuff. I've done tapping before, and I can tell you, this has very unique properties that I think that can be very, very useful in your wellness arsenal. Again, we're definitely going to touch a lot with Dr. Dawson Church about some of the benefits of EFT. Thanks, everyone, for listening. My name is Omar Cumberbatch, and this is the Wellness Ultimatum Radio. Have a good night.